Chapter 91. I've written another article. You better hurry down and help Livy squelch it. She's out pottering around somewhere, poor housekeeping slave. And Clara's in the hands of the osteopath, getting the bronchitis pulled and hauled out of her. It was a bad attack, and a little disquieting. It came day before yesterday, and she hasn't sat up till this afternoon. She is getting along satisfactorily now. Lots of love to you all. Mark Twain's religion had to do chiefly with humanity in its present incarnation, and concerned itself very little with any possible measure of reward or punishment in some supposed court of the hereafter. Nevertheless, psychic investigation always interested him, and he was good-naturedly willing to explore, even hoping, perhaps, to be convinced that individuality continues beyond death. The letter which follows indicates his customary attitude in relation to spiritualistic research. The experiments here mentioned, however, were not satisfactory. To Mrs. Charles McQuiston. Dobbs Ferry, NY, March 26, 1901. Dear Mrs. McQuiston, I have never had an experience which moved me to believe the living can communicate with the dead, but my wife and I have experimented in the matter when opportunity offered, and shall continue to do so. I enclose a letter which came this morning the 2nd from the same source. Mrs. K is a Miss Saurian, and lately she discovered, by accident, that she was a remarkable hypnotizer. Her best subject is a Miss Sauri girl, Miss White, who is to come here soon, and sustain strictly scientific tests before professors at Columbia University. Mrs. Clemens and I intend to be present, and we shall ask the pair to come to our house to do whatever things they can do. Meantime, if you thought well of it, you might write her and arrange a meeting, telling her it is by my suggestion, and that I gave you her address. Someone has told me that Mrs. Piper is discredited. I cannot be sure, but I think it was Mr. Myers, president of the London Psychical Research Society, we heard of his death yesterday. He was a spiritualist. I am afraid he was a very easily convinced man. We visited two mediums whom he and Andrew Lang considered quite wonderful, but they were quite transparent frauds. Mrs. Clemens corrects me. One of those women was a fraud, the other not a fraud, but only an innocent, well-meaning, driveling vacancy. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. In Mark Twain's Bermuda chapters entitled Idle Notes of an Idle Excursion, he tells of an old sea captain, one Hurricane Jones, who explained biblical miracles in a practical, even if somewhat startling, fashion. In his story of the prophets of Baal, for instance, the old captain declared that the burning water was nothing more nor less than petroleum. Upon reading the oaths, Professor Phelps of Yale wrote that the same method of explaining miracles had been offered by Sir Thomas Browne. Perhaps it may be added that Captain Hurricane Jones also appears in Roughing It as Captain Ned Blakely. To Professor William Lyon Phelps, Yale University, New York, April 24, 1901. My dear sir, I was not aware that old Sir Thomas had anticipated that story, and I am much obliged to you for furnishing me the paragraph. T is curious that the same idea should leave entered two heads so unlike as the head of that wise old philosopher, and that of Captain Ned Wakeman, a splendidly uncultured old sailor, but in his own opinion a thinker by divine right. He was an old friend of mine of many years standing. I made two or three voyages with him, and found him a darling in many ways. The petroleum story was not told to me. He told it to Joe Twitchell, who ran across him by accident on a sea voyage, where I think the two were the only passengers. A delicious pair, and admirably mated, they took to each other at once, and became as thick as thieves. Joe was passing under a fictitious name, and old Wakeman didn't suspect that he was a parson, so he gave his profanity full swing, and he was a master of that great art. You probably know Twitchell, and will know that that is a kind of refreshment which he is very capable of enjoying. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. For the summer, Clemens and his family found a comfortable lodge in the Adirondacks, a log cabin called Hilaire on Saranac Lake. Soon after his arrival there, he received an invitation to attend the celebration of Missouri's 80th anniversary. He sent the following letter to Edward 50, Dimmitt, in St. Louis, among the Adirondack Lakes, July 19, 1901. Dear Mr. Dimmitt, by an error in the plans, things go wrong end first in this world, and much precious time is lost, and matters of urgent importance are fatally retarded. Invitations which a brisk young fellow should get, and which would transport him with joy, are delayed and impeded and obstructed until they are 50 years overdue when they reach him. It has happened again in this case. When I was a boy in Missouri, I was always on the lookout for invitations, but they always miscarried and went wandering through the aisles of time, and now they are arriving when I am old and rheumatic, and can't travel, and must lose my chance. I have lost a world of delight through this matter of delaying invitations. 50 years ago I would have gone eagerly across the world, to help celebrate anything that might turn up. It would have made no difference to me what it was, so that I was there, and allowed a chance to make a noise. The whole scheme of things is turned wrong end to. Life should begin with age and its privileges and accumulations, and end with youth and its capacity to splendidly enjoy such advantages. As things are now, when in youth a dollar would bring 100 pleasures, you can't have it. When you are old, you get it and there is nothing worth buying with it then. It's an epitome of life. The first half of it consists of the capacity to enjoy without the chance. The last half consists of the chance without the capacity. I am admonished in many ways that time is pushing me inexorably along. I am approaching the threshold of age. In 1977 I shall be 142. This is no time to be flitting about the earth. I must cease from the activities proper to youth and begin to take on the dignities and gravities and inertia proper to that season of honorable senility which is on its way and imminent as indicated above. Yours is a great and memorable occasion, and as a son of Missouri I should hold it a high privilege to be there and share your just pride in the state's achievements. But I must deny myself the indulgence, while thanking you earnestly for the prized honor you have done me in asking me to be present. Very truly yours, S50. Clemens. In the foregoing, Mark Twain touches upon one of his favorite fancies, that life should begin with old age and approach strong manhood, golden youth, to end at last with pampered and beloved babyhood. Possibly he contemplated writing a story with this idea as the theme, but he seems never to have done so. The reader who has followed these letters may remember Young Wing, who had charge of the Chinese educational mission in Hartford, and how Mark Twain, with Twitchell, called on General Grant in behalf of the mission. Young Wing, now returned to China, had conceived the idea of making an appeal to the government of the United States for relief of his starving countrymen. To J.H. Twitchell, in Hartford. Ampersand, N.Y., July 28, 01. Dear Joe, as you say, it is impracticable in my case, certainly, for me to assist in an appeal to that Congress of land thieves and liars would be to bring derision upon it, and for me to assist in an appeal for cash to pass through the hands of those missionaries out there, of any denomination, Catholic or Protestant, wouldn't do at all. They wouldn't handle money which I had soiled, and I wouldn't trust them with it, anyway. They would devote it to the relief of suffering, I know that, but the sufferers selected would be converts. The missionary utterances exhibit no humane feeling toward the others, but in place of it a spirit of hate and hostility. And it is natural. The Bible forbids their presence there. Their trade is unlawful. Why shouldn't their characters be of necessity in harmony with, but never mind, let it go, it irritates me. Later. I have been reading Yun Wing's letter again. It may be that he is overwrought by his sympathies, but it may not be so. There may be other reasons why the missionaries are silent about the Shensi two-year famine and cannibalism. It may be that there are so few Protestant converts there that the missionaries are able to take care of them. That they are not likely to largely concern themselves about Catholic converts and the others is quite natural, I think. That crude way of appealing to this government for help in a cause which has no money in it and no politics rises before me again in all its admirable innocence. Doesn't Yun Wing know us yet? However, he has been absent since 96 or 97. We have gone to hell since then. Kossuth couldn't raise 30 cents in Congress now if he were back with his moving Magyar tail. I am on the front porch, lower one main deck of our little biju of a dwelling house. The lake edge, lower Saranac, is so nearly under me that I can't see the shore, but only the water, small poured with rain-splashes, for there is a heavy downpour. It is charmingly like sitting snuggled up on a ship's deck with the stretching sea all around, but very much more satisfactory, for at sea a rainstorm is depressing, while here of course the effect engendered is just a deep sense of comfort and contentment. The heavy forest shuts us solidly in on three sides. There are no neighbors. There are beautiful little tan-colored impudent squirrels about. They take tea, 5 p.m., not invited, at the table in the woods, where John does my typewriting, and one of them has been brave enough to sit upon John's knee with his tail curved over his back and munch his food. They come to dinner, 7 p.m., on the front porch, not invited. They all have the one name, Blennerhassett, from Burr's friend, and none of them answers to it except when hungry. We have been here since June 21st. For a little while we had some warm days, according to the family's estimate. I was hardly discommoded myself. Otherwise the weather has been of the sort you are familiar with in these regions. Cool days and cool nights. We have heard of the hot wave every Wednesday, per the weekly paper we allow no dailies to intrude. Last week through visitors also the only ones we have had, Dr. Root and John Howells. We have the daily lake swim, and all the tribe, servants included, but not I, do a good deal of boating, sometimes with a guide, sometimes without him. John and Claire are competent with the oars. If we live another year, I hope we shall spend its summer in this house. We have taken the Appleton country seat, overlooking the Hudson, at Riverdale, 25 minutes from the Grand Central Station, for a year, beginning October 1, with option for another year. We are obliged to be close to New York for a year or two. August 3rd. I go yachting a fortnight up north in a 20-knot boat 225 feet long, with the owner, Mr. Rogers, Tom Reed, Dr. Rice, Colonel A. G. Payne and one or two others. Judge Howland would go, but can't get away from engagements. Professor Sloan would go, but is in the grip of an illness. Come, will you go? If you can manage it, drop a postcard to me, COH. H. Rogers. 26th Broadway. I shall be in New York a couple of days, before we sail July 31 or August 1, perhaps the latter, and I think I shall stop at the Hotel Grosvenor, Cor. L. Zareth Street and 5th Ave. We all send you and the Harmonies lots and gobs of love. Mark, Terev. J. H. Twitchell, in Hartford. Ampersand, NY, August 28. Dear Joe, just a word, to scoff at you, with your extravagant suggestion, that I read the biography of Phillips Brooks, the very dullest book that has been printed for a century. Joe, 10 pages of Mrs. Cheney's masterly biography of her father's, no, 5 pages of it contain more meat, more sense, more literature, more brilliance I, than that whole basketful of drowsy rubbish put together. Why, in that dead atmosphere even Brooks himself is dull. He wearied me. Oh, how he wearied me. We had a noble good time in the yacht, and caught a Chinese missionary and drowned him. Love from us all to you all. Mark. The assassination of President McKinley occurred September 6, 1901. Such an event would naturally stir Mark Twain to comment on human nature in general. His letter to Twitchell is as individual as it is sound in philosophy. At what period of his own life, or under what circumstances, he made the long journey with tragic intent there is no means of knowing now. There is no other mention of it elsewhere in the records that survive him. To Rev. J. H. Twitchell, in Hartford. Ampersand, Tuesday, September 10, 1901. Dear Joe, it is another off day, but tomorrow I shall resume work to a certainty, and bid a long farewell to letter scribbling. The news of the president looks decidedly hopeful, and we are all glad, and the household faces are much improved, as to cheerfulness. Oh, the talk in the newspapers. Evidently the human race is the same old human race. And how unjust, and unreflectingly discriminating, the talkers are. Under the unsettling effects of powerful emotion the talkers are saying wild things, crazy things. They are out of themselves, and do not know it. They are temporarily insane, yet with one voice they declare the assassin sane, a man who has been entertaining fiery and reason debauching maggots in his head for weeks and months. Why, no one is sane, straight along, year in and year out, and we all know it. Our insanities are of varying sorts, and express themselves in varying forms, fortunately harmless forms as a rule, but in whatever form they occur an immense upheaval of feeling can at any time topple us distinctly over the sanity line for a little while. And then if our form happens to be of the murderous kind we must look out, and so must the spectator. This ass with the unpronounceable name was probably more insane than usual this week or two back, and may get back upon his bearings by and by, but he was over the sanity border when he shot the president. It is possible that it has taken him the whole interval since the murder of the King of Italy to get insane enough to attempt the president's life. Without a doubt some thousands of men have been meditating the same act in the same interval, but new and strong interests have intervened, and diverted their over-excited minds long enough, to give them a chance to settle, and tranquilize, and get back upon a healthy level again. Every extraordinary occurrence unsettles the heads of hundreds of thousands of men for a few moments or hours or days. If there had been 10 kings around when Humbert fell they would have been in great peril for a day or more and from men in whose presence they would have been quite safe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.